The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
174.
You are correctamundo.
It should be 175.
It's true, but then things happened and stuff happened and mm-hmm. a thing mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. we took a week off.
There's a saying.
Tell
to
me.
Err is human,
okay.
But to really screw up takes a computer.
Yeah, and if that's the case, thank you, computer. But with that said, if it wasn't for computers and that, we wouldn't have access to the things like our Instagram, our Twitter, our email, and we wouldn't be able to get the encouragement that you send us. And so thank you to Candace. As she had said, I really enjoy your podcast. A friend encouraged me to listen to it. I've been dealing with depression for a while, and I've really been encouraged by your guests. Would love to hear discussion on relationships or depression. Thank you for the show from Candace.
Okay. Well, we will write that down and see what we can find for you. In fact, we've got, I think, some good conversations coming up in the near future.
Yeah. So and we will find somebody who maybe is... a professional at talking about depression.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
Or maybe somebody who's a professional at dating. Talk about relationships. And then we also got a DM that had said, hey, guys, you guys rock, 5 stars. And so that's a good reminder to review if you hear the podcast on whether it's Apple Podcast or Spotify, wherever else.
Yeah, we are available wherever you get your podcasts. So we would love if you would subscribe and then write kind words. And
yeah, please,
5-star reviews are always welcome.
All right. So before we get to our guest this week, and we're going to talk about being a father and having kids, we had mentioned that Joe Selecki and his wife had a baby a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then another former guest just announced that she and her husband are expecting their first.
Yeah, Brooke Nichols and her husband Steve announced on Instagram that they are expecting baby number one. I am so excited for them.
A lot of fun and a lot of scary all at the same time.
Yes.
And so we get to talk with that about our guest for this week when it comes to being a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hills and the valleys of that.
Yeah.
And what that may look like. So why don't we welcome our guest for this week. And Robin Steele, my friend, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Robin, we'd like to ask the skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
Man, I'm Robin Steele. I'm from Texas. I have amazing family here. Thankfully, I know Jesus, so that helps me a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised in Texas?
Yeah, I was born in the Austin area, right in the center of the state. And then my wife and I did move to New Mexico for just a little bit. And then we got back to Texas as soon as we could. And I've been here ever since.
It seems as though, and I mean, I say this tongue-in-cheek in a sense, but everybody that I know that grew up in Texas wanted to be a football player. So what was life like growing up in Texas?
That was tough for me because I'm short. And not very fast.
Hmm.
So, yes, I did play football. I tried it. I gave it a shot in junior high. After my freshman year, I was like, this is not for me.
It's not for you, hey?
I had to give it up and went for soccer. That was a little more my game.
What were you like? Was faith always a big part of your life as a kid?
Yeah, I grew up in a great family. They really introduced me to Jesus, you know, from an early age. In fact, my mom was actually in church when she went into labor with me, and it was a Sunday. She went straight to the hospital from the church I was born, and then the next Sunday we went back to church, but this time I was outside of the womb. And so I've been in it all my life. I've been very, very blessed to be in this community of faith, and it's really shaped me to who I am today.
There always seems to be a point in someone's life where if they grew up in the church, they end up making that faith not just something that is a part of their family heritage and tradition, but it becomes a part of who they are. What was that moment like for you?
Yeah, I love what N.T. Wright says. He says, you know, everybody has to cut their teeth on the gospel, you know, themselves. And so that for me wasn't until I was married and my wife and I got pregnant with our first child, and everything was going great, and man, we were excited, making all these plans for our baby, our first child, and everything was so exciting until we got a sonogram one time, and we were in the middle of that sonogram, and the doctor goes, hey, we need to go back to my office. And so we took this long, scary walk back to his business office. And just were tragically given the news that they couldn't see our daughter's brain. We were shocked and stunned. I literally pinched myself. Like, I'm dreaming. This is weird. Let's just go back. Let's try this over again. He says, when we look at your child's body, everything looks healthy. Her entire body looks healthy except for her head. You know, there's really very little brain tissue, mostly just water. And so most likely she's going to be born with very difficult disabilities. And you can go ahead with the pregnancy, or if you want, you can go out of Texas to Kansas and get a late-term abortion. We thought about that for a few seconds and said, no, we're gonna go for this. We trust God. We believe He can take care of this. And so we went forward, and it was that journey, you know, that journey of just brutal impossibility that really helped shape our faith to what it is today, you know, personal, authentic faith.
Were you a pastor at this time?
I was a children's pastor. I was 24 years old. Loved what I did, you know. As I said earlier, I'd, you know, quote, done it all right, done every, you know, didn't have any big rebellious periods. I was just living the life, you know, trying to honor God. And before the sonogram, I remember clearly I was driving to the church to work, and I had this thought, like, I wonder what would happen if my child was born with a disability. I kind of get troubled for a little bit, and then I was like, ah, that won't happen. You know, that's like winning the bad lottery or something, and that you know, that won't happen to me. So I just kind of dismissed it and pulled into the church parking lot, and yeah, that was 19 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. And little did we know that was exactly the path we were going to take, and here we are.
There's always this, and I know that, you know, when friends are having babies or we're praying for healing, or, you know, God is going to heal for you, God is going to heal her. Was it in your heart that you believed that that was going to happen? And then when she's born and she wasn't, quote unquote, healed, where were you then?
Yeah, so I totally believed that God was going to heal her. I had the faith for that. I believed it. That's what we were all praying for. And then when the day came for her to be born, we go to the C-section. And the doctor brings her up out of the womb, and we're like, I mean, the birth is amazing. It's just incredible, and it's a miracle. So we were so elated and excited about it, but then our heart sank because we could see that her head was larger than a regular baby, and it was like, oh, man, it didn't happen, you know? And so then she goes back for an MRI, and they come back and say, hey, it's worse than we thought. And so she's probably going to just live for about 6 months. And you should just take her home and basically enjoy her while you have her. There's nothing we can do to fix her brain. We don't even know what parts are there. We don't know what parts are not there. It's completely deformed. It's very small. So, you know, there's nothing we can do. So we were just devastated. That was the lowest moment. We were just struggling so hard. And didn't know what to do, you know, because he hadn't answered the prayer. And later, a few days later, I had a deeper connection with God. I felt, okay, I went into my wife's hospital room. She was recovering from the C-section. And I said, I've come to this moment, you know, I pray that God can still heal her now. Even now, I believe He can reform this tissue. And I believe He can do that. And so that's, I want to pray for that. But my second prayer is that if He doesn't do that, I just pray that she'll just be taken home, you know, like home with Jesus, to heaven, die, basically. Mm-hmm. And that she'll be able to be healed there, you know. She can walk the streets of gold and dance, and, you know, she can be healed there. And that was a big moment for us. I had come to this conclusion that death was, you know, okay. Let go that much. And I really thought that God was going to get glorified in one of those two situations. But here we are 18 years later, and neither one of those prayers were ever answered. She wasn't healed, and she didn't die. she's still here with us, and she's severely disabled. And there was just no, the scripture says no mind can conceive, you know, what God has in store. Like, we just couldn't understand that God was so good that she could be disabled and our life could be great. And here we are, and our life is not normal at all. It's totally abnormal, but it's great. God has shown up in so many ways.
What does life, I mean, we could talk from as of right now today, or from when you bring her home. What? How does your life change? What does life look like then, knowing that this is your new normal?
Yeah. Early on, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, she's a little baby, just taking care of her. Yeah, she did have some medicines that we had to give to her when she was an infant. But, you know, for the most part, everybody's just like, oh, look, you're a cute little baby. And, you know, we would wrap her up in swaddling clothes and people wouldn't notice that her head was too big and stuff like that. And so it was just like taking care of a baby. But as she got older, then it's obvious, okay, we have to get a wheelchair, you know, and she can't use her arms or legs. She can't speak verbally. She can't eat with her mouth. She's tube fed. She takes, you know, at this point at 18, she takes 24-hour nursing care, which my wife and I do a lot ourselves, and then we have nurses that come in and help us sometimes throughout the week. But, yeah, so the older she's gotten, it's been a huge physical burden on us.
When she was 6 months, and then she was a year, and then a year and a half, what was going on in the minds of you and your wife?
Yeah, we were trying to come to grips with she's going to live. Because mm-hmm. she was only supposed to live for 6 months. And so her biggest threats to her life to this day is the flu, or I guess now coronavirus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like every flu season, it was like, okay, is this it? Is this the one? And my wife would live with the weight of going in to get her, you know, in the morning, like, am I going to go in and she's going to be dead? And so she would go into the room to wake her up for the morning, and she would have this anxiousness, like, is she going to be alive when I go in there? You know, and so we were praying, like, God, heal her, God, do this and that. And my wife and I each kind of have our own different journey through this, but for me, it was, I finally got to this point to where I'm like, I'm praying so hard for her to change and be different and be, quote, normal, that I'm not loving her for who she is. And I just had this clear voice from God say, I love her. I love your daughter. I love Kennedy. Hmm. That's her name. And I love her and as she is. I love her as she is. She doesn't have to do anything for me. And it was a huge moment for me in my life that my prayer shifted and my perspective shifted, that I was so focused on it being a different way that I wasn't truly understanding the blessing of what I had.
Did you and your wife have any more kids after that?
Yeah, we have two kids after Kennedy. We have a son who's now 16, Jude, and we have a son that's 14, Avery. And they are just typical teenage boys that we joke around a lot and say they're harder to take care of than our daughter.
Was there fear then for you and your wife to then have that conversation about having another child?
Absolutely. We did genetic testing. I mean, we did a lot of praying. We did some soul searching. Like, do we have the capacity to take care of more kids? What if they're disabled as well? We wrestled with that a lot until we just had peace from God that it's time to move forward. And so we had two more, and they're amazing.
I can imagine there's that certain level of grief, you know, having these visions and dreams of what your first child will grow up to become, and then finding the news that, you know, Kennedy would have a huge hurdle to climb. What was that process like for you, and how did you come to terms with the loss of the future that you had anticipated for her?
Yeah, it really was like a death when we got the news, and we had grieving process, and thankfully God had wrapped around us community, people, friends, family, church family that has carried us. I mean, literally, I believe that it's our community that has been the hands and feet of Jesus throughout this whole thing and loved on us and been our friends, taking us out to eat and taking care of Kennedy when so we can go on a vacation and things like that. So it has been this huge, huge adjustment. And even to this day, we'll have like flashes of sadness. You know, like we'll see somebody that's her age, a friend or a cousin or somebody that got their driver's license or playing the piano or graduates. And it's like every once in a while it'll hit us, you know, and like, oh, it's tough. You know, it's tough. So we've never been like bitter at God or upset at God or angry at God. But it has been a journey of dealing with those unanswered prayers.
You wrote the book, How to Be Made Whole. Why did you decide to then write it?
Well, I have this reoccurring thought from God of wholeness, you know, and this idea that my daughter on the outside looks very broken and like, no one would want to have her life, you know, it's so hard. But the more we live with her, we realize that our daughter's actually probably the most whole person we know. Because under the surface of her life, you know, what nobody can see is that she is completely at peace. She never wrestles with her identity. She never tries to prove herself. She never is concerned about the world's problems and, you know, some of that has to do with her brain disability, but I think like that's a pretty cool disability. Like, what if we never doubted our position with God, or we never struggled with some of these things that we struggle with? So, you know, I started wrestling through some of those ideas, and the concept of the iceberg is just a beautiful picture of us. The iceberg has 10% of its mass above the surface of the water and 90% of its mass below the surface. And I think that's a picture of us. So if you're to look at us, we have a portion of us that everybody sees, and almost all of us spend all of our time working on that surface stuff. And we neglect the part that's below the surface, and we push it away, we try to ignore it, we try to act like it's not there. And you know, God just has a better plan than that. So these ideas just started formulating, and I just felt like God said it's time to write a book about it. So here we are.
During this whole process, how did your perception of prayer change, or did it?
You know, I grew up in such a strong, faith-based family, and I'm so thankful for that. But it almost was so sheltered and so good that it started creating in me like this spiritual kind of arrogance that I you know, see people that were struggling, and as I was becoming a pastor, I'd be like, you know, hey, just work harder, you know, pray more, God will take care of it, you know, why are you so worried about it? And prayers were completely shaped around selfish positioning, you know, so like, it wasn't necessarily praying for God's will to be done. It was praying for my will to be done and praying for, like, God to be a Santa or a genie, like, hey, fix this part of my life, help me with this part of my life. Instead of the perspective of this is your story, God, this is your world, I'm a player in your, you know, world, I'm not the main character, you are. And so this impossibility with my daughter really began to shift my perspective of who God was and who I was in him. And so as a result, it affected the way I talked to God. Since I saw him differently, and I saw it was better. I mean, it was ironically, this unanswered prayer actually showed me a side of God that was more glorious and more loving and more compassionate.
It's interesting in that when it comes to your boys, do you see something different in them because they may now have more compassion for someone because they see on a daily basis what it's like to have a sister like Kennedy?
Yeah. You know, it's all they've known. Kennedy was the firstborn, so as they grew up, you know, they grew up hanging off her wheelchair and, you know, taking her for walks and dealing with the complications of that. And it's interesting to see as they develop their heart for people, their heart for her, you know, as they're getting more mature, they're able to handle some of that and really spend time with her and talk to her and engage with her. And so, you know, I'm excited to see how that plays out as they become adults, you know, and even see it further develop their connection with other people and their own personal calling, you know, whatever that might be.
When you think about your life and you think about, you know, the hurdles that you've gone through, I'm just kind of curious about, like, any moments where you just got angry with God, or is this, did you just kind of surrender the situation to him? How did that process go for you guys?
Early on, when Kennedy was just a couple days old, I was in the hospital, and I was looking. This was back before computers were at the bedsides, and there was a clipboard, and the doctors had written notes on the clipboard, you know, for the next group of nurses coming in. And I looked down, and I happened to read that the doctor wrote, "We've told the parents that their daughter will not have a meaningful life." And, you know, when I read that, I was so upset. I was so angry. And, you know, it put us in a tailspin. It was like, how could this be? Why is this happening? I don't understand how this is happening or why this is happening. And, you know, she's just an innocent child that is being born. She had nothing to do with this. This is not her choice. She did nothing wrong to deserve this. Yet it's like a life sentence placed on her from birth that she has to deal with. This is her issue that she's dealing with, and it's not fair to her. And I also thought, you know, everybody's going to judge her when they see her, and they're not going to understand her value as a person, her validity as a person. They're just going to see her, and they're going to judge her, and they're going to write her off. That's what this doctor did, you know. And he didn't mean anything mean by it. He wasn't trying to be mean or cruel. But it just shows the human condition that we determine meaning based on, you know, what people can do instead of just who they are. So at first I was so upset with that statement, but later it was actually something that I was so thankful for because it really pushed us to God. You know, we realized we can't rely on any human to give her value. It's only up to God. God's the only one that's going to make sense of this. And, you know, the beauty of it is that it's contagious. So, like, if God says that about her, he says that about me. If he says that she's meaningful, then he says that I'm meaningful before I do anything, you know, before I'm good at anything or I make money or people like me or whatever. So that was what's so contagious about her and her life and her story was that it really gives us this perspective of God and how he declares over us our meaning and our value and our significance. And that is what truly brings wholeness into our life, not us trying to, like, patch things up or fix things or finally get someone to like us or approve of us. So that was what really has been so powerful about her life.
Do you think that she knows her value? Do you think that she knows that God loves her and that she has an incredible family?
That's a great question. You know, she's very expressive in a nonverbal way. So she doesn't speak words, but emotionally, she's very present. So, you know, there's days you go in there and she looks at you and you can obviously tell she's engaged with you. You start talking to her, she starts smiling, she starts laughing. And, you know, if you, when you're with her and you see her in a wheelchair, you see just the amount of disability that she's in. You know, it would be like, how can you smile? How can you be happy? How can you be at peace? And I tell you, some of the most interesting times is when she's laying in bed and she'll like be looking into like up at the ceiling and she'll see something and she'll just start laughing or grinning at something. And we turn around like, what are you looking at? And it's almost like she's seeing angels or she's seeing something, you know, that we can't see in a different realm, like a different sense, you know. It's incredible.
As a pastor, you're constantly connecting with people. Has Kennedy's disability given you and your wife an opportunity to share and connect with others?
Yeah, we have a lot of people that we're connected to that have special needs. We love connecting with special needs parents, special needs families. But interestingly, a lot of people come to her and pray for her, you know, to help us, and they will sense a healing in their own life. And so it's been a two-way street, you know. People come to us or come to her and think that they've been called to help her, and they do. There's so many that have helped us, but it's awesome to see them receive things as well. So, yeah, we've had a really good church here in San Marcos, Texas, that has been so helpful in our lives, and people have been really growing in their faith here. It's a great community of people around us.
How to Be Made Whole is available now. You can go to mademeaningful.com or at Robin Steele on the socials. Brother, we appreciate you and taking some time to share your heart.
Thank you for having me.
Being a parent is a scary thing. Being a first-time parent, also very scary. And I remember seeing on our sonogram that our son had a spot on his liver. Turned out to be nothing, but it still is one of those scary moments.
Yeah, we had a similar situation with the ultrasound for my youngest, and it was a shadow on her heart. You think, oh no, is everything going to be okay? But it ended up being okay.
Yeah. So congratulations to all those who are having babies at the moment. It's so good. And as my dad had said to me, I've said to parents as well, you're not the first person to have a kid, nor will you be the last.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've all kind of gone through whatever that is.
Yeah, exactly.
You can download on places like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Make sure you tell a friend, tell a family member.
And you can always head to faithstrongtoday.com for more.